When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
In business, first impressions are everything. And that's why every business owner needs to know about Ruby. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special. You definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would. Never miss another customer call again. This year, make your business the best it can be. Visit Ruby.com today. Or just call them at 844-900-RUBY.
Hey, everyone. Josh and Chuck here to remind you that our last three shows of the year, boy, this is a good show this year, are taking place very soon and tickets are still available.
Yeah, so get in the saddle and come out and see us, partners in Orlando, Atlanta, and Nashville.
Just go to stuffyoushouldknow.com and click on the tour link and you can get all your tickets right there.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast again. Right, Chuck?
That's right, everybody. This was a very strange case, very rare, in which we actually recorded an entire episode again that we had already recorded. It was my fault for picking it, but to be fair, nobody else noticed either.
Nope. Not at all.
But we decided to release this anyway because we listened to the episodes and we thought it was kind of fun and it might be kind of like a live-in lore as a bit of a Stuff You Should Know Easter egg, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we really wish we could say it was unique rather than just rare, but this is the second time we've done this. See our Black Holes episodes.
That's right.
So here we go again, everybody, with the Birth Order episode, round two. We hope you like it.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and Jerry's here. And you put the three of us together, you got a pretty good sip ship going.
Sip ship? Is that a word?
Oh, you didn't read that one thing I sent you?
I did, but I didn't pick out that word.
Yes, sibship. It is the total siblings in a family.
I love that.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
And you can have high sibships. That means your parents got it on a bunch of times without any protection. The second is the low sibship, which means your parents were maybe a little cold to one another. And then the third one, the mid sibship, which I just made up. But I like threes.
Or low means they got it on a lot, but, you know, used protection.
Yeah, or they're highly intelligent and don't want to ruin the planet with extra people. That's another possible interpretation.
I'm sure you won't hear about that one at all.
No, definitely not. It's not me. I'm talking about the people who are into that kind of thinking.
Other people.
I can't remember. There's a society for that, and I cannot. Oh, the something for, it's like Society for Human Extinction. They're like, we don't want to kill anybody alive, but we just want to stop reproducing because we're ruining the planet. I can't remember the name of them.
I wonder if it's a name that has an acronym that just spells, ugh.
It spells, die, die, die.
Oh, goodness.
Well, Chuck, I'm excited about this one. This is a good pick from you. And
thank
it
you.
Was a great assist from our friend Dave Ruse. And we're talking about birth order, and it's one of those things that, like, everybody knows birth order. I mean, it was even on the Brady Bunch. Like, Jan was clearly the middle child.
Oh, yeah.
The middle daughter, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And really kind of bore that chip on her shoulder.
Yeah.
Little Bobby Brady, he was the youngest, and he was often neglected as a result. He had to kind of make his own way and find out that he was really into pork chops and applesauce. And so on and so forth, right? So everybody knows about birth order. But it turns out, I didn't realize this, It's had a long history of being presented scientifically and then refuted scientifically. And then it'll come back again. And then it's gone again. And then it's going to come back at you one more time. Kind of like that.
Yeah. So we're going to go over those ups and downs. I'm sure we'll toss in our own opinions here and there that have no basis in science.
Sure.
Because I have a, as everyone knows, I'm the youngest.
I know.
I have an older brother that's 3 years older.
Yep.
Scott, that we've talked about a lot.
So great.
He's the best. And I have a sister that is 6 years older. She is the eldest, my sister Michelle. She's also great.
Yep.
And so it's like, you know, 3 years apart, 3 years apart, nothing, because I think some of this stuff can be sort of taken with a grain of salt. Like if you have, you know, the surprise baby that's, you know, 14 years younger than anyone else in your family, things might, you know, be different. And then some people say it makes no difference at all about your eventual personality.
Right.
But I guess to recap, we should just go up over how it typically breaks down, which is if you're the firstborn, then people will say, oh, you're probably going to be bossier. You're probably going to be an overachiever, maybe a perfectionist, maybe a little neurotic. If you're the middle child or the second born, you're probably going to be a peacemaker and a people pleaser. And then if you're the baby of the family, then you're just a little spoiled brat, but you're probably going to be adventurous because you were left to your own devices and you answer to nobody. So you just go off and join the Peace Corps or something.
Sure. Then there's also only children, which are kind of their own thing. But they
we should do a whole thing on onlys, I think.
Sure. They very much resemble, of the other ones, they much more resemble a firstborn child.
Yeah.
But a weirder version of a firstborn. So the thing is like all of this sounds totally true and obvious, but it just is not fully borne out in the research. It's kind of, Dave compares it to a horoscope where you can kind of see yourself or your siblings in, you know, any one of these things. They just kind of make sense. And we have this selection bias and confirmation bias where we just pick out the stuff that agrees with us and we ignore the points about, say, a middle child or a firstborn child that don't quite fit. We just kind of discard that stuff. And because all of us have some form of family, typically, we all have like anecdotal experience with that. And even if you don't have a family, you're probably a friend of somebody who has a family. So you've observed it yourself. So that means that it's just supported that much more through your own experience, which means it's been really hard to shake.
That's right. And that horoscope thing, not to say Dave is not a free thinker, but a lot of people compare it to horoscopes. As it turns out.
Yeah, and another thing you can call it is pop psychology, for sure.
Yeah.
Because pops love it.
We should go back to the beginning, I guess, which is to say the 19th century. As far as the science on birth order goes, to 1874 with someone named, that we've talked about a few times on the show, Francis Galton. I know that we talked about Galton on episodes where he talked about eugenics.
Sure.
But I'm sure other things have come up as well.
Yeah, he was a polymath, but he was well known for eugenics, genetics. He came up with fingerprinting catalogs. Like he did all sorts of stuff.
That's right. So he was the half cousin of Charles Darwin, and he had a book called English Men of Science. Kind of sounds like Real Men of Genius.
I was going to say it was adapted into a series of Bud Light commercials later.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. of course, Their Nature and Nurture, in which he basically was kind of keen to investigate the origin of genius. So what better place to go than to study the gentlemen of the Royal Society, Royal Society of London, the oldest scientific academy in the world. And he got 99 guys. It's very strange that he didn't get 100, but he didn't get 100. And he did a lot of research and got a lot of data on these gentlemen, including birth order stuff.
Yeah, but also mother's hair color. He measured their heads. He really went to town on these 99 English men of science. And what he found out when he kind of crunched all the data was that 61 of the 99 members that he profiled of the Royal Society were among the oldest in their family. They were either only children, only sons, I should say. they were only, or they were eldest sons, or if they were middle born, they were toward the top of the middle born, the earlier side of the middle born cohort.
That's right.
And if there was no effect on birth order and genius, then it should have been basically 45 and a half, 45 and a half.
Right.
And spare a thought for those poor half people.
That's right. And what about the other 10%, though?
I think that's Jerry.
Okay. So.
Wait. Yeah, you're right. So, no. Yeah. 40, did I say 49 and a half or 45 and a half?
Well, what do you think?
Let me rephrase that and say 49 and a half.
Okay. I got you. Because you came up with 91.
Yeah. I did, didn't I? Yeah.
So I got it wrong, too. I said, what about those 10 people? It was really 9 people.
Yeah. Plus you said 10%. So this whole thing was screwed up right, just royally.
All right. So he concluded based on this, and this is a quote that I would... I don't know if you take requests, but I would love for you to read this in the voice of Smeagol.
Can we dust him off? Okay, let's see.
Do you remember?
I think I do.
I like to think Smeagol lives in you in some way.
A little bit.
Okay.
So he said that, elder sons have, on the whole, decided advantages of nurture over the younger ones. They are treated more as companions by their parents and have earlier responsibility, both of which would develop independence of character. And in less well-to-do families, the oldest child has the advantage of better nourishment in his infancy compared to the later-born siblings.
Pretty close. I feel like that was Smeagol's brother.
Spiegel?
Spiegel and Smeagol. Not bad, though.
How do you even remember what Smeagol sounds like?
I listen to that every night. That's my,
okay.
That's my go-to-bed music.
That makes sense.
So if you were too disadvantaged in being thrown off by Josh's hilarious reading, just a quick recap, basically, is if you're the oldest, then you have an advantage because you're like your parents' buddy. You got a lot more responsibility, mm-hmm. so you're going to be more independent. And then if you're a family that's maybe doesn't have as much money, then if you're the oldest, then you're gonna get the chicken on the table and not be fighting for that chicken.
Yeah.
Like your little brothers and sisters will be.
Especially in infancy because you were the only one, so you got all the baby food.
Yeah, this doesn't sound... I mean, I know a lot of this poo-poos the science, mm-hmm. but this doesn't sound wildly unreasonable to me as a,
thought. No, it's echoed still today in our ideas of birth order and explaining it.
Yeah.
So that was Francis Galton. We'll leave him. And I think probably until, I guess about the, actually not that far after, I think he was speaking, he wrote in what the last quarter of the 19th century, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, just less than 50 years later, a guy named Alfred Adler, who was a psychologist, kind of picked that up and ran with it. Not just entirely birth order, but birth order was a part of his larger theory called Adlerian psychology or individual psychology. And there were basically three founders of psychotherapy as we know it today. There was Adler, Freud, and Jung. And Freud and Jung's ideas have been largely dismissed. Alfred Adler's ideas are basically the premise for how we approach psychology today.
Yeah, and he was an interesting guy. Mm-hmm. He was a colleague of Freud. And I think through history, it seems obvious that a lot of people have kind of said like he was an acolyte or Freud was his mentor. And he went through great pains over the years to say, he called me first. Like he would go to reporters and say, look, here's a telegram where Freud got in touch with me and wanted to talk to me.
Oh, he was like that, huh?
Well, I just think he had a little bit of a sort of maybe younger sibling syndrome.
Sure.
And that will, you'll see that kind of plays out a little bit in his own sibling dynamic in his research.
His older brother was named Sigmund, too. So been Freudian. He might have been Freudian on Freud.
Yeah. They were together, he and Freud, for about 9 years studying. But then when they split apart, and some people say that it had a lot to do with this sibling dynamic and birth order thing. Mm-hmm. I think it was more complicated than that.
Definitely.
But they never talked again after that.
No, they split
up.
They
were done.
Yep. But Adler's ideas went on. It's definitely worth looking into. He basically says that the whole basis of our individual psychology comes out of our social interactions.
Mm-hmm.
We learn how to approach life and the world through our interactions early on with our family. That's mm-hmm. He called that our lifestyle. There's a web of interactions between parents and kids and also among siblings. He called the family constellation. And then he also said that, like, basically the point of life was to be a good contributing member of a society that is working toward positivity and equality. He was way ahead of his time because this guy was writing 100 years ago, and now we're just starting to adopt his philosophies as, like, not just valid, like, that's the point of individual psychology.
Yeah. He has a good quote, too. And again, this seems very reasonable to me.
Mm-hmm.
When he says, it is a common fallacy to imagine that children of the same family are formed in the same environment. Of course, there's much which is the same for all in the same home, but the psychic situation of each child is individual and differs from that of others because of the order of their succession.
Yeah.
So he's basically saying something that, like you said, a lot of people hang their hat on, which is like, hey, just because you grew up in the same house doesn't mean you grew up in the same house. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And he gave an example of that that kind of really figured into his theory about birth order, which was to him another big driver of personality that came out of the early experience in the family, is that especially older and middle children, or actually, I guess, older and middle children only, went through the trauma of being dethroned.
Yeah.
They were, you know, at one point, if you were the firstborn, the only one, and then all of a sudden another one comes along and you're not the shining star of your parents' universe any longer.
That's
you have
right.
to share that with somebody. And he identified that as a trauma, and that alone would significantly contribute to a child's personality, and that was based on birth order.
All right. Boy, that's a great setup, I think.
Yep.
So let's take a break, yes?
Yes.
Smeagol, what do you think?
Yes.
Perfect. And we're going to come back and break down his thoughts on this whole dethroning and what that meant right after this.
Learning stuff is fun with Josh and Chuck. Stuff you should know.
Hey, everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, everyone. Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework. All right, so this isn't that much different as far as what birth order means, but it's a little more specific to his own findings and thoughts on the matter. So if you're oldest, like you said, you're dethroned once there's a sibling below you. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, there's a chance you might become a problem because you're trying to get that attention again. You might act out. You will likely feel responsible for your younger siblings as if you're a parent.
Yeah.
That can make you pretty neurotic.
For sure.
So that checks that box.
Yeah.
And you really may act as a parent. You may kind of help raise the kids, especially back then when the parents are away or the parents are busy. You might be that parental authority in a lot of cases. So you may have a positive view of authority. And because of all of this stuff, you're probably going to be pretty hardworking. And you, that perfectionist thing comes in pretty conscientious.
Yes. So that's the oldest, right?
That's right.
Next is second born. If there's two, if there's just two kids, this applies to them. They are constantly keeping up or trying to compete with the older sibling. Mm-hmm. So life is a little bit exhausting. And this is something that Adler himself went through with his older brother, Sigmund. He kind of identified the older sibling then having more of an influence in some cases than the actual parents do on the child's development, which makes a lot of sense too, because
sure,
that older child is being a mini parent to the second child.
Right.
If the kid's finding like they're just constantly are being beat by the older sibling who doesn't even seem to be aware that they're in a competition, they're still winning. Uh-huh. They might just go off in a totally different direction, and whatever they've identified the older sibling to be, Alex P. Keaton, Young Republican right. type, they're going right. to go the exact opposite way and start following the Grateful Dead.
Like Tina Yellers did.
Exactly. Man, what was that
name on the
show? It doesn't matter. Tina Yellers, it's the ultimate name. There's Mallory, Alex, and
Tina Yellers.
Yeah, if they didn't use Tina Yellers, I think that was a big miss that the writers walked past.
I know, and that they should only have called her by Tina Yellers, not Tina.
Right, exactly. And then, like, in the credits, it says Tina Yellers as Tina Yellers.
Yeah, as herself. So we mentioned earlier, I think I did, about Adler's own situation at home. And it turns out, beyond Freud, he had an actual older brother, like you said, whose name was Sigmund. Mm-hmm. And he sort of had issues with it. He always was trying to live up to this older brother, Sigmund.
Right.
Complained about it a lot, it seemed like. I think there was a biographer when he was a little bit older where he said, "My eldest brother, he was always ahead of me. He's still ahead of me."
Which is true. He's never going to catch up to his eldest brother, at least in birth order.
Well, that's right.
He also had two younger brothers. One adored Adler, kind of bucked the trend. Mm-hmm. The other one felt competitive with Adler. So he was in the position that Adler was with Sigmund.
Yeah.
The middle child, so say your parents are just hitting it fast and loose and they're having more and more children. The middle children are going to have their own kind of baggage to carry around. They frequently feel forgotten, ignored, neglected, Jan Brady-ish. Mm-hmm. They may decide that life is extraordinarily unfair, that they're invisible, and that might really make them neurotic in their own way. And then this really makes a lot of sense to me, too. They may find that family constellation that Adler said was so important in your development and in your youth elsewhere, outside of the family. They're the kid that goes off and is like, yeah, whatever, you guys have your fun little, you know, family barbecue. I'm going to go hang out at my friend's house instead. I like their family more.
Yeah, which is interesting because I think that flies in the face a little bit of the typical middle child thing of being a people pleaser and a uniter. Mm. Yeah.
That's funny because I think of the younger child as a people pleaser.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's usually the middle child thing.
This is the thing. This is where it starts to fall apart.
Exactly. Well, because also in my family, like, you know, my sister, she did fine in school. I did fine in school. But my brother was, like, right in the middle, and he's the really smart guy.
Sure, yeah. Scott.
So he set the bar as number two. Mm-hmm. But I also felt like I never felt like I had to live up to that.
Oh, that's good. That's healthy and lucky.
Lucky, because I didn't strive to. I wasn't like, no, I can't be as smart as Scott, so I'll just do my own thing. I just didn't really think about it. And my parents, well, I was about to say they didn't put that kind of pressure on me, but they just, there was not a lot of attention on me by the time I came around.
No, yeah, so you could just kind of do your own thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
So, well, here we are then at the youngest. I'm talking about myself, pampered and spoiled, mm-hmm. which I was not, because less is expected. Like we mentioned earlier, you're probably going to be a little more adventurous. I definitely was more adventurous and as sort of the black sheep of my family, but I don't think it was because less is expected of me. And then, you know, Adler at the end talks about how the successful men of our time, and I think of all times, oftentimes were the youngest. And he mentions like people in the Bible, and he even mentions, this is where he loses me a little bit.
Definitely.
He mentions fairy tales, and I'm like, so the people in these made-up stories, the youngest were more successful. So that means something to science?
Right. Yeah, that's where I actually wrote careful, Adler, after that. Because it's he got, you know, he had some really great theories. And then one of the big problems of early 20th century psychologists is they just look out in places that didn't really apply and use them as proof. And that's a good example of that. Because his theories are very sound and they make a lot of sense. They're well thought out. It's just, you don't run out to the Bible to prove your point. It doesn't, that's not how science works typically.
Yeah, look at King David.
Exactly. And then we're at only children, which, okay, we'll do a whole episode on them. But they have they have the advantage of being the sole recipient of their parents' attention and focus and love and adoration, just like a firstborn child, but they never go through the trauma of being dethroned. So they are basically little kings and queens who run the show.
They stay on top.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, a king who's not dethroned stays the king.
Exactly, that's true. And Adler wrote that they retain the center of the stage without effort. They're generally pampered. And they form a style of life based on being supported by others and at the same time ruling them.
Great combination.
Yeah, totally.
Hodgman talks a lot about being an only child. It's very funny to hear him muse on this topic.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so these theories were out there in the 1920s, basically through for about 60-something years. It was sort of just commonly accepted that this was the case. They had done studies that backed up a lot of this. Mm-hmm. And then a funny thing happened in the 1980s. In fact, in 1983, there were a couple of Swiss psychologists, Jules Angst and Cecil Ernst, and they said, you know what? This is all poo-poo, and we're going to write our own book called Birth Order, It's Poo-Poo. Actually, it's Birth Order, Its Influence on Personality.
Right.
And they went back, looked at all these studies, like 1,500 studies from the mid-40s to 1980. A lot of these studies had you know, backed up Adler's theories and stuff like this. But they said, you know what? The closer we look, the more we pick this apart, there are a lot of fallacies in here. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of methodological pitfalls, mm-hmm. and basically I think that there is, like, birth order effect really doesn't have anything to do with personality, or at least no much more than anything else that we could kind of find out.
Yeah, they definitely poo-pooed it. One of the examples they gave was that there was a meta-analysis of previous studies of birth order findings. Which means that they compiled a bunch of findings from a bunch of different studies and applied statistical analysis of it. They turned these smaller sample sizes into one large sample size. And of course, it found a positive correlation between the birth order and personality traits. But mm-hmm. those particular researchers said, well, we didn't actually include any studies that didn't find a positive correlation between birth order and personality traits. We only studied ones that did show that. That's like that's some junk science right there. And that's the kind of thing that Angst and Ernst were saying, like, this is the quality of the studies heretofore. And when you really look at the methodology and all the, like, their findings, like, it just does not add up. You can't replicate them.
Yeah, they had a pretty sick burn. They called it post-hoc theory, mm-hmm. which is basically like you can go into these studies and you can find whatever you're looking for if you kind of just pick apart different parts of it
yeah.
and cherry pick different parts of it. Mm-hmm. And they used one good example they used was anxiety and which children in a family had the highest anxiety levels and reported those levels. And they said, you know, if you look, if you're Adler or others, you have an explanation for all of them. Right. So if it's the youngest, it's because you're the weakest sibling, which is that true?
I think they mean physically your older siblings are generally bigger and stronger than you.
Is that true?
Typically, sure. I mean, compare like a shrimpy 4-year-old to a 10-year-old. 10-year-old's going to beat up on the 4-year-old any day of the week.
Well, we'll get to the snapshot in time thing because I thought they meant overall.
Right.
Like I grew up to be the smallest and weakest.
No, but yeah, you just touched on a huge problem that we'll get to later. Don't blow it now.
I didn't. I said put a pin in it in my brain. Okay. If the oldest of the family reported being the most anxious, mm-hmm. then they said, oh, well, it's because they had an inexperienced mother. And if it was the middle, it was because they were neglected. So they're like, you can't do that. That's not science.
Right, exactly. And they pretty much definitively removed birth order influencing personality as a field of psychology. Like, psychology turned its back on that. And that was it for a dozen years, essentially, maybe a little more. Mm-hmm. But before their book, Angst and Ernst's book, came out back in the 70s, I think actually 1970, there was a psychologist named Frank Soloway. He was working on his doctorate, I think, at the time. And he had a professor that was into birth order. This is before the Swiss study, the Swiss book came out. It made Swiss cheese a birth order.
Uh-huh.
And the Soloway's professor said, you know what, Charles Darwin, let's just talk about Darwin for a second. He said, sit down, Soloway, sit down. I've been wanting to talk to you about this. Charles Darwin came up with one of the most radical theories that science has ever produced mm-hmm. in coming up with natural selection and evolution, right? But did you know that Darwin's mentor, the person that had the greatest influence on his work, his entire career, a geologist named Charles Lyell, did not accept that we evolved from apes, did not accept natural selection. He could not accept it. And in fact, Lyell was in quite a pickle because he prized science and reason, and his protege had just used science and reason to show that humans are no different than animals. And mm-hmm. Lyell was like, no, reason is what separates us from animals. So he had a really hard time accepting that. And so Soloway's college professor pointed to Darwin being a later born and having a much more ability to think freely, and Lyell being a firstborn and thinking much more conservatively as the explanation to that very famous gulf between the two.
Yeah, which is a stretch for me. Even though I think there's a lot to birth order. That one is, I don't know, it's a stretch. But Soloway was like, interesting. Let me look into this a little more. I want to see if this is a reasonable assumption mm-hmm. or theory at least. And he ended up writing a book in 1996 called Born to Rebel, Birth Order, Family Dynamics, and Creative Lives. And he did his own meta-analysis of all of these studies that are out there. And he basically went on to poo-poo Angst and Ernst and said, Adler was right all along. There's a lot of significance to birth order and how it ties to your personality. Mm-hmm. And here's why I think this is true. Because a child occupies a niche in a family, and that niche is determined according to your birth order. So we're calling it birth order, but what it really is a proxy for what the real things are behind this, which is how big you are, what's your status in that family, what is your power dynamic in that family, mm-hmm. what's the age difference and stuff like that.
Right, and that those are the things that really influence your personality. But they all are at the end of the day tied into birth order. It's just not birth order in and of itself, but the qualities that come with birth order, right?
Yeah, which seems like splitting hairs, but maybe no one had split that hair yet.
I mean, it makes sense to me. It definitely removes it from any kind of like astrological stuff, because birth order, if you're like, yeah, you're a middle child, so you're all these things, not, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, you're smaller than your older brother, so you right. Have a, you don't like being touched kind of thing. I don't know. It makes sense. It takes it and actually provides an explanation to it. And by the way, I just want to point out, get this, Chuck. So he started this research in 1970, released the book in 1996,
mm-hmm.
right smack dab in the middle of that 25-ish years of research. That Swiss book came out. Can you imagine dedicating 13 years of research and then all of a sudden some book comes along and completely disproves everything you've been working on?
Yeah.
But Frank Solo was the kind to be like, nope, they're wrong. I'm right. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah. And for him, family dynamics all came down to a Darwinian power struggle, basically, mm-hmm. between these siblings for affection from their parents.
Right.
So, again, if you're firstborn, you're going to basically act as a surrogate parent to your younger siblings, not because you have some great desire to teach those kids, but you're looking at mom and dad and saying, like, see how much I'm helping? Like,
yeah.
I'm helping be like little mommy or little daddy. It's why they respect authority. It's why they're conscientious. And it's why they identify more with parents. The younger kids, this has lacks of physical strength, I guess, presumably just because they're younger in that snapshot in time. Mm-hmm. Which we'll get to. Don't spoil
it,
Chuck.
Blurt.
But they have what he called low power strategies. So still had strategies as far as this power struggle in the family, but more like, hey, let me use humor mm-hmm. or social intelligence to get their affection instead of, you know, like physical things.
They were the kids that were more likely to spend their allowance on a bow tie that spins.
Do you ever have one of those?
No, I never did.
I've never had a bow tie.
I added like a little clip-on bow tie for Easter, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's a thing. I know a couple of bow tie guys.
I learned how to tie a bow tie for mine and Yumi's wedding, actually.
So you wore one then?
Yes.
Or you're like, nah.
I just
practiced.
I just wanted to learn. Yep.
I can't pull off a bow tie. It's not a good look for me.
Oh, yeah, I'd like to see that. Let me be the judge of that, okay?
All right. Okay. Will you tie it for me?
Yes, I will. I know how to. I'm a little rusty, but I can get it back.
Well, you know you got to stand behind me and wrap your arms around me and do it that way.
Of course. Okay.
Yeah. If you do it in front, it's weird.
And then afterwards, we'll do that funny thing where it looks like you have four arms and I'm hiding mm-hmm. behind you, and we'll do all uh-huh. sorts of weird stuff.
And then after that, I'll get behind you and teach you how to swing a golf club.
Okay, fair enough. It's all in the hips.
All right, so from that power dynamic to wrap it up and that power struggle, we also have the middle children. And these are the ones, again, because you're in the middle, you're more likely to cooperate, you're more into diplomacy, and you're probably mediating fights between the oldest and the youngest, mm-hmm. which did not track in my family. My brother and I didn't fight a lot, but if there was sibling fighting going on, it was usually me and my brother because we were closer in age. Mm-hmm. My sister was 6 when I was born, so I was her little baby boy. Yeah. And so she and I never had a lot of fights and stuff.
Gotcha. So one of the other things that Soloway spent his time on was he basically did the same thing Francis Galton did. He profiled a bunch of different people
mm-hmm.
to kind of support his point. I read that he basically created a database of 6,566 historical people who were involved in 121 different political and scientific upheavals from the French Revolution, the mm-hmm. Protestant Reformation, Darwin's theory of natural selection. And then he looked at a bunch of different factors, but one of those factors was birth order. And what he found was, I saw an interview with him, he said that, yeah, there's a bunch of different stuff that influence our personality, our behavior. I think he controlled for 256 different ones, like age, yeah. religion, class, education. And he said, yes, some of those things influence our personality. But he said nothing packs the wallop of birth order. He basically said it's birth order, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he gave some examples, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, if he did sort of the same thing that others have done, which is to point at famous people in history mm-hmm. and say, well, see, look at this person. They were the firstborn and they did this.
Look at King David.
Right. Look at King David. In this case, he said, look at Mussolini and look at Stalin. Mm-hmm. I believe Stalin was not the firstborn, but his siblings died in infancy. So He was sort of de facto firstborn.
Yeah, they call it the psychological firstborn. That's the emphasis they put on it.
Yeah. So he said, look at these people. They were firstborns and they were monsters. And look at Marx and Darwin and Gandhi, and they were all laterborns. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you start breaking it down, though, and you say, oh, what about like Isaac Newton or Einstein? That goes against your idea because both of those guys were firstborns, and it went against the common thinking that the laterborns were going to be the ones to come up with these revolutionary thoughts.
Yeah.
And he said, but you know what? The people that supported them were 2 to 10 times more likely to be laterborns.
Right. So he did the opposite in those two cases. When he pointed to something like, he said Lincoln was a second child, and he had the revolutionary thinking of ending slavery.
Yeah.
And that's an example of basically being reductivist. Like he boiled down these huge historical machinations down to one individual to prove his point, right?
Yeah.
Lincoln ended slavery, and he was a second born. And then he does the opposite with examples that don't fit. Like you said, Einstein and Newton. Well, they were firstborn, but their supporters were 2 to 10 times more likely to be later born. So now he takes it from the individual and boils it back out to a bunch of different people having to do with these revolutions in thinking. It's pretty emblematic from what I've read of his argument.
Yeah, and I love Dave Ruse, who put this together. He often inserts little jokes here and there, mm-hmm. just for us. But sometimes we like to bring them out on the show. He wrote that 2 to 10 times more likely, mm-hmm. and then put, whatever, pal.
Right.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. So Born to Rebel was a
Rebel?
I've been wanting to say that the whole time.
Okay.
It should be E-L-L-E, really, if you think about it, but okay. So it became, I think, a bestseller. It was a really popular book, despite being pretty scientific. I think half of it was scientific annotations and bibliography. But I believe he wrote it in like a way that, you know, the average person could digest. And it really made waves because, again, he comes along 13 years after psychology. He was like, okay, great, that's done. Birth order has nothing to do with anything. He said, nope. It's the most important driver of personality, everybody. So he was widely criticized for it, including by another controversial thinker in psychology, Judith Rich Harris. And she was controversial, like I said, because she was kind of tangential to the field. She was kicked out of Harvard while she was working on her doctorate. And later on was awarded with a prestigious award that was named after the director of the psychology department who kicked her out. So she came full circle, but she was kind of considered like an outside thinker. But her whole jam was actually parents have like the least influence on kids. It's genes and peers that really shape people's individual personalities. And she basically said, no, Soloway is just totally full of it. And this doesn't hold water at all.
Yeah. And she had her own sick burn.
Yeah.
That I think was sicker than the earliest sick burn. She said, quote, "It is never surprising when the originator of a theory produces evidence that supports the theory. The real test of a theory is whether other people working independently of the originator of the theory produce evidence that supports it."
Ouch.
Pretty good burn.
It is a great burn. So I say we take our second break because that basically puts Soloway away for now.
Right.
This was 96 and he got shouted down typically, but his work definitely brought it back into the popular mainstream, which is why still today you see like parenting sites and psychology sites like referring to the stuff as if it's true and real.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'd say we move on and we use an ad break as a transition for that.
Let's do it.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, everyone. Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Okay, so Soloway really ruffled a lot of feathers, and it took another decade or two before people finally got around to conducting about as legitimate a meta-analysis of previous studies that you could possibly do. Or they compiled their own studies based on really large sample sizes. Because if birth order is a thing, and birth order applies to everybody, including only children, then if you get a bunch of people together, birth order is going to show up in some way, shape, or form because it's there among everybody. It's not like some people have some sort of birth order. Everybody who's ever born has some sort of ranking, even only children. And yet, when you look at really good data using really good methodology, it just does not come to the surface.
That's right. This one was very large in 2015. It looked at data from 377,000 high school students in the United States. Mm-hmm. Then there was another study in the same year that analyzed data from about 20,000 students in Europe, in Germany, in the U.S. Mm-hmm. As well, and U.K. And there were a couple of psychologists, Radhika Damian and Brent W. Roberts from the Fighting Illini of the University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what an Illini is.
It's an Illinoisanite.
Is it?
I don't know.
All right. That sounds about right. But they fight. I know that.
Right. They're always fighting.
But they isolated. They tried to do controls for everything as well. And they looked at everything, which included, of course, birth order. And then, the sex of the kid and the number of siblings.
Sibship size.
Socioeconomics of it all. And all this stuff. And they basically said, this is the largest study that we've ever done. The most sophisticated of its kind. And there is little to no functional relation between birth order and personality. Like, full stop.
Right. Yeah, full stop is right. And those same psychologists, Damian and Roberts, they wrote basically like an editorial in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which also published their study of the 377,000 high school students. That is such a huge sample size. And they basically said in this editorial letter, here are all the problems from the previous study. There's just flaws galore. And they basically divided the types of studies for examining birth order into two different categories. There was the between family study design and the within family study design. And the between family study design said it just looked at a bunch of people who weren't related and then polled them about their birth order and then looked at their individual personality traits. Within family design looked at the actual members of a single family or multiple single families and then examined the personality traits based on their birth order in relation to the other members of their family, their sibship.
Yeah, and it seemed to hold a lot more water when you just looked at the family designs within a family and not between a bunch of these different families. Like, this is when it started to make sense a little more for me. But at the same time, I don't feel it's too horoscopy to see that there's a lot of correlation between some of these traits.
Right.
But if the science doesn't hold up, then it's just anecdotal, basically.
Well, what they were saying was, so like if you're looking at a between family design, you're not taking into account typically the number of siblings total. You're just taking account the birth order. And that they're saying that if you look at something like the number of firstborns versus laterborns, there's more laterborns than firstborns. There's only one firstborn in a family, but there can be multiple laterborns, right? And that firstborns typically are smarter. They have a higher IQ. That we'll get to in a second is actually true. And that a lot of it has to do with them coming from families of high socioeconomic status. And that's not controlled for. If you don't control for the sibship size, then your methodology is just crud. That was just one of multiple problems they had with it.
Yeah, and if you're what if you're from a large Catholic family of like 8 kids, mm-hmm. and you're 6 of 8 or 5 of 8, mm-hmm. like, does all this stuff just go out the door at that point?
If birth order is true, then no, it wouldn't. Like there, you would have multiples in the middle, like sharing similar traits, I would guess.
Right.
But that's not the case. And then they did another little victory lap, and they basically said, oh, there's a couple of other things that are sacred cows in the field of birth order and personality. One is that it differs by gender, that birth order personality traits show up way more in males than females. And they were like, nope, that's not true at all. We studied that as part of this meta-analysis. Nope, it's not correct. The other one is that, okay, birth order really starts to get diluted when you look at the full range of siblings in a family, mm-hmm. especially if there's, you know, a decade or more in between the oldest and the youngest, because really birth order only shows up between siblings that are separated by no more than 5 years. So it gets diluted if you look at the whole thing. And they said, nope, we shrunk everything down to just 5-year gaps between siblings, tops, and it still did not show up. So they just absolutely trounced on the theory in every single way they could, using the best data and the best methodology. And they said, guys, it just is not real. Can we please stop talking about this?
Yeah. And someone else is going to come along, because people can't stop talking about and researching birth order.
It's true. Yeah, look for it.
It really is, because as I was doing this, I was sort of into thinking about if I felt this is true or not, or what about my family. And then I was like, who cares?
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, why it's pop psychology to a certain degree. I mean, these findings are sort of interesting, I guess, but what's the end game as far as what are we really learning?
Yeah.
As far as like what makes it us better families or better as a human race, like probably nothing.
Well, to me, it's an example of that that trait of 20th century science that's like a compulsion to find the mm-hmm. one reason that something happens.
Yeah,
and this is a great example of that. But it's also, again, I think it's because we're all like confronted one way or another with birth order and have made our own observations. So it's just kind of almost a folk psychology, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So we were going to talk about IQ because it is true that when you look at the data and the numbers, mm-hmm. that firstborns score highest on IQ tests. Right. It's not a lot. What I found was like a point. So it's not some huge difference. On average, I don't think.
It's not a shameful difference?
It's not a shameful difference, but it was there. And there's a guy that has a really interesting take on all this. His name was James, I don't know how you would say it, Zajonc is the only way I can say it.
Yeah. That's what people call him in the bars, probably.
Z-A-J-O-N-C.
Zajonc. Zajonc.
Oh, Zajonc?
I'm going with James Zajonc.
Right.
And the whole name flows like teeny others, James Zajonc.
It does, the youngster.
Yeah.
So he looked at SAT scores. I found this pretty interesting, actually. He started in 1967 when there was a big drop in verbal SAT scores that went on for about 10 years. And, of course, people at the time were saying, oh, it's because of this, it's because of that, it's because these children these days, our society is just going down the drain, mm-hmm. people are getting dumber. But later than that, about 10 years later in 76, he said, here's what I predict. SAT scores are going to continue to go down for about 4 more years. And then in 1980, they're going to start to go up again. Mm-hmm. And this is why, everybody, because there was a baby boom in our country, and there were a lot of firstborn children because of that baby boom that were born in 1949. So that means they would be taking the SAT in about 1967. That's when scores peaked, because firstborns, as we all know, are smarter. And then as each successive child is born from 67 on, they're not going to be as smart. And so these SAT scores are going to go down. Mm-hmm. But once we hit 1980, it all resets, because that baby boom stopped in 62. Mm-hmm. And if you were born in 62, you're going to take the SAT in 1980. So these scores are going to go back up. And they did.
Yeah, because between 1949 and 1962, it was much likelier that you were a second born than a first born compared to the beginning of the baby boom. So he basically just dropped the mic right there, because it turned out that that's exactly what happened. Like, his prediction came true. And what he showed was like, yep, birth order has to do with IQ. It's just as simple as that. It was later followed up or supported by a study from the Netherlands of 400,000 military recruits. They found the same thing with IQ score. Remember, the SAT test used to test your IQ. Mm-hmm. And so what did I come up with? Zionk? Yeah.
Sure.
James Zionk.
Yeah.
He had a pretty neat theory or an explanation or hypothesis of why that would be true. And he said that it was based on what we talked about earlier, that if you're an older sibling, even like a second born sibling, as long as you're not the baby, you have the ability, or you have the opportunity, I mean, to teach somebody else. And to teach stuff, you have to know stuff. You have to be paying attention. You have to be aware. You have to be absorbing information. And that you have less and less of an opportunity to teach as more and more kids are born, because you're sharing that function with other second or later born kids. And then if you're the baby, you have no opportunity to teach. So you're just the dumbest of the bunch, essentially, at least as far as Zionk's theory went. And again, it's backed up by SAT and IQ scores, but thankfully, you're saying that it's not that ridiculous of a difference between firstborn and lastborn.
Yeah, I think that teaching function carries a little weight.
Definitely, it makes sense, at least.
Yeah, it makes sense. A lot of this makes
sense,
though.
But if there was any warning from this entire episode, it's that just because it makes sense doesn't mean it's correct.
Exactly, because we mentioned this a few times, put that pin in it. We're going to take that pin out, because a very sort of keen thing to be aware of with all of this is when they do these studies, you are looking at a point in time, a snapshot in time of when someone does this study. It might be when the siblings are 18, 14, and 9. You do that same study with that same family when, you know, 10 years later, and you might get wildly different results on who these people are and what their personality is like. So it's, you know, you really have, there's so many things to account for. I don't know that you can draw some sweeping conclusion like everyone keeps desperately trying to do.
Right. Yeah, and it makes sense too, because, I mean, it's called the perfect age compound. If you're looking at just a snapshot in time, of course the 18-year-old oldest born is going to be more conscientious than the 9-year-old baby of the family. That's just how it works. That has to do with growing up, right? Not where you were born in your sibship, your position. And then also, of course, the 9-year-old's going to be more likely to wander off into the woods and have fun with their friends than the 18-year-old. That's just part of being young. So that definitely explains it quite a bit to me, if you ask me.
Yeah. And I think where I end up is, like, I think there is a lot to birth order. And I think it's bound to have an effect on who you turn out to be, along with a lot of other factors in your life. But I think it's one of them.
Okay. Well, there you go. Well, Chuck said he thinks it's one of them, which, of course, triggers listener mail.
I'm going to call this a follow-up on Francis Kelsey, which I thought was pretty cool. We did a shorty recently on Francis Kelsey, one of the heroes of the FDA. And we got a letter from Katie entitled, "My Sister's Hero Was Francis Kelly." Mm-hmm. "Dearest Josh, Chuck, Jerry, and Dave's Spirit." Dave appreciates that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You guys have no idea how thrilled I was to listen to today's short stuff about Francis Kelsey. This woman is my sister Sarah's hero. Like, Sarah put a portrait of Dr. Kelsey in her child's nursery hero.
Wow.
My sister Sarah has been telling us for years about the important contribution that Kelsey made to public health and women's health as a whole, but specifically to maternal, infant, child, and adolescent health. And that sounds, after I read this, I was like, oh man, I wish we could have done a full thing on Francis Kelsey. Sarah works tirelessly in adolescent sexual health despite all the fire public health has been under for the past few years. Her devotion to protecting the health of teens, regardless of their gender, sexual orientation, or citizen status, makes me proud to be her sister. I'm so happy a public servant was highlighted on your show. Thanks from the bottom of my heart for sharing this story so more will know about Dr. Kelsey's work. It's from a longtime listener, Katie. Katie, this is great. And Sarah, love that you're doing this good work. It's amazing. And I'm curious about your birth order now.
Very nice. That was a great email, Katie. That was a very sweet thing to send us. So thank you for it. And hats off to you too, Sarah, like Chuck said. And if you want to look up to your older sibling or younger sibling or whatever, we'd love to hear that. You can send it to us in an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.